It's Wednesday, June 14th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from College Station, Texas. Well, good evening, and for tonight's podcast, I haven't done this for a while. I'm actually going to have three different segments. First, a little personal note about my upcoming employment change, which many of you have kindly emailed me or left comments on the blog about. Secondly, some reflections on student podcasting and student content creation. And lastly, some shared interviews from some of the support staff at Stephen F. Austin Middle School today in Bryan, Texas, on how we can successfully support teachers in one-to-one technology immersion projects where every student and every teacher in the building has a laptop computer. In a job hunt for new employment as I have finished the coursework requirements for my dissertation and really, or I guess I should say for my doctorate, but really just need to finish and write my dissertation. And because of some staffing changes that happened, I really did not make much progress at all in the spring semester, and I did get a lot more intentional and busy, as best I could at least, with the job hunt. And what ended up happening was really entirely unexpected. I had been interviewing for faculty positions at a variety of different universities and colleges around the United States. I actually sent applications to more than 10 places and heard back from quite a few. A few I didn't hear back from at all, actually, but most I did, and did actually interview on the phone with a couple. But what ended up happening was really, I think, fortuitous and is going to work out, hopefully, just great in the short term and maybe even the long term. And I learned about a position that was available in the state of Oklahoma with the former Southwestern Bell, what is now AT&T. And the position is called Director of Education Advocacy. And it is not a sales position. It is not a commission-based position at all. It's a salaried position. And Southwestern Bell, now AT&T, has individuals in these roles in the state of Texas, in Oklahoma, Kansas, in Missouri, and also in Arkansas. And I think they additionally have some that are sort of in a different group that include California and some other further western states. But my role in this position, as I understand it, and I'll be starting next Monday on June 19th there in Oklahoma City, will be to really advocate for the effective integration and use of technology tools in the classroom, kindergarten through university. So this is a K-20 position. And I am really excited about this opportunity. I should have a chance to work with a variety of different schools within the state of Oklahoma. And there's also a lot of potential, I think, to do work that extends outside the boundaries of the state, because obviously AT&T is a global company. And I've received several different invitations to speak in upcoming months and in the 2006-2007 school year. And those arrangements are going to be honored. And it's certainly possible that I may have opportunities to do additional presentations and speaking outside the state. But anyway, I will be able to report later what evolves here. But the position was explained to me as a very entrepreneurial one. And they are looking for out-of-the-box thinking, creative thinking, looking for someone who can network, work with a wide range of different constituents. And so the passions that you've heard me talk about and probably read on my blog that range from digital storytelling, the use of disruptive technology tools in constructive ways to promote student literacy and learning, including blogs, including podcasts, but also I think the effective use of digital social networking. And we continue to hear lots of negative press about MySpace. There was a doggone headline on CNN this morning when I was having breakfast about a movie that was posted on MySpace with some kids beating someone up. You know, the problems that we see reflected or through the window of technology really are not problems with technology itself. I think technology is a tool and it's also a window. I was quoted in the Dallas Morning News a couple weeks ago on an article that involved students who were posting pictures of themselves holding weapons on social networking sites, and they were in gangs, and they were in, you know, threatening other people, and things like that. That is not a technology problem. In fact, to some extent, I think we ought to be excited that kids are actually getting online and acquiring literacy skills to communicate with others instead of, you know, doing other things. Obviously, we need to help them make better choices, but those choices don't have to just do with technology. A lot of them, I think, have to do with problems that we've had for a long time that maybe we have a bigger window into because of technology. The internet is not going away, and I don't want to get off on a complete tangent here, but anyway, I'm just very, very excited about the opportunities that I think this position will afford me, and I expect to be able to continue blogging and podcasting and sharing the great success stories as well as the stories of learning that happen when things don't go right in schools when it comes to technology integration and the drive to engage students and make learning an authentic experience. One of the best things that I think I picked up last week at a brown bag presentation in Lubbock was this idea of engagement being defined as interactivity and meaning. And so hopefully I'll be able to continue in my own teaching and learning journey, find ways to make learning more truly engaging, and also help other teachers to do the same thing. So appreciate all the notes and email and feedback for the new position, and I will look forward to keeping you posted as this evolves in coming weeks and months. For a while, may be surprised to hear some different music. That is actually a piece that I composed in GarageBand, at least 6 months ago, I guess, and have posted on the internet for anyone to use who is interested. I called that Footfalls Toward Home, and I'll include a link to that in the podcast show notes. I want to briefly reflect a little bit on podcasting and student content creation, because I've been spending a lot of time this week, in fact the last 3 days, working with about 100 teachers in grades K through 12 here in Bryan, Texas. I'm actually staying in College Station, Texas, which is adjacent to Bryan, Texas. On my blog a few weeks ago, I was corrected by a resident of Bryan, Texas, that indeed College Station is not Bryan, Texas, but they are adjacent to each other. And the teachers, though, are in Bryan, and I worked with about 60 or so teachers that were participants in a technology target grant that is just wrapping up. And then today I worked with about 31 teachers at Stephen F. Austin Middle School who are part of the Texas Technology Immersion Pilot Project, and that has just finished its first 2 years, and extension funding has been approved by the Texas Education Agency to permit the immersion campuses to continue with immersion and to bring the 22 control campuses into immersion over a 2-year period. And so some of the teachers on those control campuses will be immersed in the coming year, and then in year 4 of the project, the hope is that all the students are going to be immersed, but the state hasn't really come up with enough money to do that. My reflection is that it is a tremendous change for teachers to talk about students creating content and creating media as a regular part of the school day. And I think that is especially true at the secondary level. And I'm not criticizing, anyone that I have worked with this week or really at any other time, but I'm just observing that for the majority of teachers, and this is, I think, true of university faculty too, teachers like to teach where they are comfortable, and they are comfortable with traditional instruction, with the textbook as the basis for instruction, with more of a teacher-centered, content-centered focus in the classroom rather than having their students create media. There is so much pressure today, I think because of educational standards, on teachers to feel like they have to cover it all and they have so much to teach that they just don't have time to create content and have students create content. That I really think this highlights a need that we have for instructional change in the United States and probably elsewhere in the world. As well. We just have so much faith that standards and testing are going to take us to the promised land when it comes to education. And folks, I'm here to tell you that is a lie. That is a lie that is being perpetuated by politicians that do not understand education and that I think fundamentally want to get reelected. And so they're on a bandwagon that a lot of people have joined on that is damaging our schools, and most importantly, it's damaging our children. And so, I apologize for that email message there in the back, but rather than edit, I'm just going to just finish up by saying we need to not only help teachers develop this perspective on education that says, students, when they construct a artifact, when they're knowledge architects and they're creating something that could be a podcast, as I've been doing with teachers the last few days, but it could also be something else. It doesn't even have to be technological, but if it's technological, obviously it has maybe more chance of engaging them and keeping their attention. But it is imperative that we do not simply accept the lie that our role as teachers is to simply prepare kids for tests that are multiple choice and pretty defined in nature. We've got to help kids develop the skills they need for the future. And one of the most important skills is the ability to communicate effectively. And to the extent that blogging and podcasting can help students develop those skills, I think we are not doing our jobs. We are not being moral beings as educators if we ignore those possibilities and fail to embrace them. One analogy that I shared with teachers today that I've heard elsewhere is this idea of no carpenter being a hammer carpenter. What carpenter would just use a hammer and refuse someone who said, wait, there's a screwdriver, wait, there's a wrench, wait, there's an awl or there's a drill or there's something else that you could use to accomplish your task? If we think of someone who's a contractor working on building a fence and he has a hammer, or she has a hammer, and they have nails, and someone comes along and says, hey, there's a nail gun. Would you be interested in this nail gun? What kind of a contractor is going to say, no, there's no way I even want to consider using a nail gun? I think that would be a person who would be content not changing and working very slowly and not evolving and continuing to grow and learn and improve themselves and the way that they work and the way that they accomplish their objectives. So anyway, it's been a wonderful, wonderful week, or actually 3 days with these teachers. I'm looking forward, hopefully in the next week or so, to share some of the podcasts with you, which they created really in the space of about an hour, if you look at the total production time that they had to both plan and produce the podcast. We've got amazingly creative, wonderful teachers in this country, and I'm sick and tired, personally, of having them beat up in the press and beat up by politicians who lament the fact that we are not performing comparably or better than many peer nations. And these same politicians ignore the fact that we have tremendous poverty problems in this country, and that when we compare all of our students to other places in the world, we are comparing, in many cases, a different socioeconomic set of students to each other, or students that come from very different socioeconomic backgrounds. That's not an excuse for not changing or a rationalization for maintaining the status quo, but it certainly is a call to you know, call a spade and recognize that we need to declare war on poverty in this nation, and we need to get serious about it and stop beating up teachers and administrators for not solving the problems of poverty, which clearly they cannot be expected to reasonably do on their own. It's going to take a village and a community to do that, and we need to be serious about that. So those are a few reflections, and I would just encourage you to keep sharing and extending the conversations that we're having here in the Edublogosphere. Share podcasts, share blogs, let other teachers know the possibilities of learning and also of helping students construct these kinds of knowledge projects, because it is the students that really should drive us and motivate us to improve our instruction and improve the ways that we are inviting them to engage in the learning process. Final segment for tonight's podcast, I'd like to share a short interview, I think it runs about 10 minutes or so, that I had today with Barbara Ybarra and Rhonda Ogden, who are involved as staff members at Stephen F. Austin Middle School in Bryan, Texas, with the Technology Immersion Pilot Project. We were actually visiting prior to the start of today's workshop, and the conversation was going in a direction that I thought was so interesting. I said, gosh, I need to pull out my iPod and record this. So this actually jumps in, you know, probably about 5 minutes into our conversation. But some of the questions that I was asking them focused on really the lessons that they've learned. After 2 years of immersing with technology, their teachers are obviously utilizing the tools, and their students are utilizing the tools, but they're making some changes, and they've learned quite a bit after 2 years. And you'll hear them talk about the critical need to have just-in-time support on the campus instructionally for teachers. You know, we hear it again and again that many schools spend money on hardware for technology, but they don't spend money on professional development. But it's really insufficient for these schools to just spend that professional development money on one-shot training. I mean, you can bring in the best professional development folks that money can buy. You can bring David Warlick. You could bring, you know, Miguel Gulen, David Jakes. You could bring, you know, whoever you wanted, Alan November. But the fact is, teachers are going to have needs that come up during the school day, during the week, and they can't wait for that professional development person to come in and help them solve that problem. And so I think that's a real significant thing to keep in mind, that as we move further along this continuum of immersed culture and schools that are struggling to keep up, we need to recognize what these schools are doing and how they're changing that are successfully helping teachers make the transition to teach for a digital age, not teach for an analog age. So, hope you enjoy this, and I'll include in the podcast show notes a link to a video series that I created several years ago for our statewide Gates Grant Technology Leadership Academy, where I interviewed different principals and superintendents that had been through that Leadership Academy training about what is successful. And one of the things that certainly stood out in Louisville ISD, one of the districts where I went, was this idea of having the teachers to facilitate teachers, instructional leaders that can help other teachers. And I'll also include a link to the Bryan ISD Technology Immersion website. They have a podcast and different resources. And just would encourage you to continue, again, sharing the conversation and sharing the resources, because no one grew up in an environment and in a day where all the kids had laptops. This is new stuff for all of us, and we need to learn together and certainly try to not reinvent the wheel when it's our turn to step up and do technology immersion. We need to turn to folks like these educators in Bryan, Texas, who have done this, and learn from them. I'll also include in the podcast show notes a link to an excellent resource that Mike Muir, who's at the University of Maine at Farmington, has put together, which is one-to-one stories. And these are stories from all over the country. Of course, a lot of them are from Maine, since that's where he's located. But all over the country about success stories with one-to-one learning. And that is an open forum, and so you can certainly contribute your own stories to that growing database, which will, again, hopefully benefit others who are going to be attempting, maybe in the not-too-distant future, a similar immersion project.
classroom, you revert back to what you've always done,
right,
because that's where your comfort zone is.
That's right.
One of the interesting things about last year, our district, the year prior to this past school year, wrote a new curriculum, a curriculum. We had really been disjointed with curriculum. And so they spent the entire year writing and creating curriculum. Well, last year was the implementation phase of that curriculum, and there was central office monitoring of that curriculum. And so there's a lot of anxiety and stress about implementing the new curriculum, the new sequence, and everybody on the same page at the same time within a 6 week.
Right.
And so what we heard a lot from our teachers was, do you want me to do technology or do you want me to do the curriculum?
That's right.
And they were still seeing them as separate entities instead of technology as a tool to enhance the curriculum. It wasn't until Rhonda and myself and some others sat down with teachers and planned with them with a new curriculum and then said, okay, what kind of in-classroom support do you need? What kind of co-teaching do you need? And we'll help you.
Right.
But until you sat down and looked through the curriculum with them and said, well, why don't you do this activity and enhance it in this way?
Right.
They couldn't see, they don't have the time. They're stressed. They're trying to understand the curriculum. They don't have the time to also bring that into it.
Right.
And so it became, we started to see some progress at that point.
Oh, huge. Mm-hmm. Because that particular subject that we really supported immensely became our biggest advocates.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you want, right, is to have those teachers become the evangelists and help their teachers.
Because once you gave them intense help planning and implementing, not learning the programs, but actually implementing it, then we saw, you know, after you kind of get that set, then they could kind of go on their own and do it, but then occasionally you just check back and reinforce and re-support.
Now, did you find that those strongest teacher leaders were your more experienced teachers, your younger teachers, a cross-section you couldn't generalize about?
I would not say you could generalize.
Really? What was a, was there a common characteristic of those teachers that
the
became
teachers
those strongest
best
leaders?
Are the teachers who already know instruction best.
I was
going to
say, they're our strongest teachers.
Okay.
You know, if you're a strong teacher, you're going to be able to implement technology successfully. If you have problems.
Lesson planning.
Lesson
planning, classroom management.
You're going to struggle.
Because it's just it's a disruption and another.
One of our favorite quotes from Monday, I think the whole group, we were reading several articles and listening to several speakers, was technology can be weapons of mass distraction in the classroom if you're not engaging your students. And I think what our teachers thought was, well, if I've got good classroom management skills and these kids should do what I said, just like we've always thought, teachers have always thought, that's not going to do it. Is my lesson really engaging? I've written a lesson, but is it an engaging lesson?
Yeah.
And there's a difference between using technology in the classroom and using technology in an engaging way in the classroom. If you're just doing a digital worksheet, it's still just a worksheet.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's when you change it to engagement.
And I heard
something
last week, and I was sharing that this week with the target group, that you know, engagement is what people talk about all the time, but engagement is interactivity plus meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So the laptops, you know, hopefully increase the chances of interactivity, but that doesn't guarantee engagement.
Mm-mm.
You've got to find a way to help the kids see it as meaningful and connect with it and care about it in order to have it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what do you all think engagement is? What's the formula for getting kids engaged? They have everyone has the laptops. All teachers have laptops. That's the dream that most people have for technology, but
it's doing something different that you couldn't have done without the technology in the first place. And making it public, or making there an authentic audience.
I was going to say meaningful to the students.
Okay. Yeah. So doing what Mike Muir, who's in Maine at Farmington, talks about level two technology, you're seeing those transformative uses, those things that you couldn't do otherwise. Yeah, we've been doing worksheets forever. You know, we've been doing,
and
you know, get the information
first
and regurgitate it back forever.
That's fun at first for them.
Yeah.
You know, but
the novelty wears off.
Oh, quickly.
Right.
And they go online, they look up their Nike shoes.
So how do you get those teachers to move out of that comfort zone of what they've done and those types of traditional instruction? And then
you do professional development with them in the summer, and you plan with them, and then you implement with them in the classroom with their kids.
And like you said, it's not as much of a standard deliver one day, you know, multi-day shot instruction. You've got the need for somebody on
the
ground.
On the campus full time.
So how many people will you have helping them this year?
Two per campus, plus myself, that'll flip between the two campuses.
That's great.
So that, and we also are developing a mentor program, immersion mentor teachers on each campus. for those teachers will help our new teachers and in the department learn how to do immersed lessons or technology integrated lessons that support the curriculum.
Because our poor teachers that came in mid-year, if they came in at the beginning of the year, they were better.
Mm-hmm.
But teachers that came in mid-year, I mean, our other teachers had been, you know, kind of involved in this a year and a half, and they came in, and it was just overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard enough to start teaching
it's tough
mid-year.
To come in mid-year, yeah. Period.
But then you come into it mid-year in an immersed campus.
Yeah, it's not a good recipe.
No.
Well, and we had done a new teacher academy last year, but again, it was before school started.
Right.
And so our solution to that this year was mentor teachers and selecting about 10 teachers on each campus from core subjects that would mentor their colleagues that were new to the campus on everything about immersion and paying them a stipend to do so and giving them some summer training to prepare for it and setting up that structure. And so we're in our first year of starting that mentor program. It'll start at the end of July this year.
So how many teachers do you have per campus for those two technology, what do you call them, facilitators that are on each campus?
We have one that's integration specialist and one that's technology specialist who splits her time between, splits her time between technical and integration activities.
Okay.
We'll have 10 mentor teachers on each campus. Those 10 mentor teachers will work primarily with the integration specialists.
But how many overall do you have on each campus?
Oh, how many teachers all together?
Uh-huh.
80 on this campus, or 65 on this campus, and about 83 on Rayburn.
And do you think it's common for other TIP schools to be having full-time, two full-time people like that helping?
I doubt it's common.
I don't think it is.
I think that, you know, again, it's where you're at in that process. I think they'll come to that realization real soon, you know.
Yeah.
And they might be more fortunate that in the smaller setting you can touch more teachers more quickly and more easily and work with them.
Right.
In a large school setting, you need additional staff members.
Mm.
And the professional development that you can outsource is great, but it's so expensive when you could have spent the money on a full-time position on your campus to help each and every day all year long.
Right.
And that's so much more meaningful.
So how do you – go ahead.
Well, and also you need those people that are in the trenches day in and day out that understand your student body, that understand what's going on at the campus, that can be there at a moment's notice when a teacher says, this isn't working.
Right.
All of a sudden, I can't print.
And I need help now. I don't need to wait, you know, next month when somebody comes to train or whatever. It's an immediate need.
My whole classroom can't print. Come save us.
Right.
How do you get the instructional person, though, to not spend their time doing technical things and be able to spend time with the instruction?
You do that. That's what you fight each and every day.
Well, a huge part of it is we have a help desk. So that Tony handles a lot of that. But it's the prioritizing. What's important, you know, and so you've got to, in your mind, know that instruction is the number one priority and focus on that.
Rhonda, you've been really good about when we sat down and created plans for how to support the core subjects. Rhonda scheduled herself to work with the teachers on their planning period whenever they planned as a group each week. And so those were set meetings that were always there that she always
attended.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yeah. They were on my calendar and they took precedence over everything else.
And then when she got back, she'd do them in priority order. She'd worry about gradebook issues that teachers were having technical difficulties with or, you know, where else she could
do. It was a regular time that always happened where there was always conversation and dialogue.
Well, it would be like I would meet with the sixth grade math department and they would be planning their lessons for the next week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a group of teachers that got together and met and I was just there with them.
And you're the library media specialist for the school? What's
no.
your official title?
Campus technology specialist.
Okay, so you're the technology specialist. Sharon will be the technology integration specialist.
Correct.
And your title is?
I'm the project director.
Project court.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Which I don't really know what I do.
Well,
I help with integration, I guess.
Okay. Well, thanks for...
That was fun.
Is it okay if I share this?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Creativity podcasts are independently produced and syndicated for a global audience by Wesley Fryer and are shared under a Creative Commons Attribution 2.5 license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.